For anyone who likes to make bread at home, Jim Leahy's method that requires no kneading can be seen as something of a godsend. It became popular a little over 3 years ago when a New York Times article about it went viral, and now Mr. Leahy has put together a cookbook that lays out the method, along with no-knead recipes for other types of breads and pizzas. The book is called My Bread, The Revolutionary No-Work, No-Knead Method. It's published by W.W. Norton, and I'm very pleased to welcome back to our show Jim Leahy, who Sullivan Street Bakery has been one of the major suppliers for New York City restaurants ever since it opened in 1994. It's good to see you again.
Thank you, Leonard. It's really great to be on your show again after all these years.
This is something of a disclaimer. I should admit from the start that I've been making one or two loaves from these recipes ever since I received the book last month because it's so easy and the bread tastes so good. Can you just start off by explaining how the no-knead method works?
Well, the no-knead method works according to, I really do believe it was the way in which all bread was made before the Industrial Revolution, with the one exception that in this case, in this method that I'm putting forth in the book, we're using commercial yeast, which is a byproduct of the Industrial Revolution. But I think the way of making bread where people would just add flour, water, and some leavening together, not really knead it, but just compose the dough and then allow it to sit and rot, basically, until through that fermentation, that rotting, the dough is transformed as a result of the proteins denaturing and realigning as a result of the presence of water and also as a result of what's called the sheer force of the gassing effect of the yeast.
Well, and rotting is a word that probably people don't want to hear, but process is. But you use less yeast than other breads use.
Yeah, well, I mean, at the end of the day, it's sort of like, you know, you're basically playing like a scientist at home. You're taking flour and water, these two very kind of, you know, we consider wheat and water, very elemental, seemingly elemental things. One is one of the most abundant chemicals on the planet, or the most abundant chemical. And then the other thing is a grain that has this insanely long history with us human beings, and complex history as well. And then you're basically just allowing it to rot, or I mean, you're introducing a fungus and the fungus over a period of time. And you know, it's like cheese making, except you're not eating. You're eating a cooked product instead, you know.
But you use less yeast because you're letting it go so long? Because when you knead bread, you can get the whole thing into the oven within a couple of hours.
Oh, yeah, you can make.
But this recipe requires 12 to 18 hours. You just let the mix sit and bubble for quite a long time.
Yeah, and actually, you know, the window, when you use a very small quantity of yeast, you also increase that window. That period of time when it's ideal to turn it into a loaf of bread. So you might mix the dough at 6 p.m. in the evening and then forget to do something in the daytime and leave it out in your kitchen and get home at 6 o'clock and find that it's quite suitable for bread making, in part because it's an individual loaf of bread. It's not a huge batch. So that little blob of dough has very little ability to kind of insulate itself, and as a result, the fermentation proceeds very gradually and very, very slowly. Yeasts don't have legs.
Can you do this commercially? Do you do this at the Sullivan Street Bakery?
I do utilize a no-knead method for some of my breads at the bakery, and I do a lot of what I call, you know, low knead, meaning try to really minimize the amount of mechanical working to the dough because, you know, the more you agitate the dough, the more oxygen you introduce to the dough, the more blanched or bleached the color of the bread. At the same time, while I'm saying this, kneading does and can improve fermentation because yeasts, for their metabolism, while they can also be anaerobic, do enjoy oxygen.
Mm. So their kneading is another method.
When I say, you know, yeast enjoyment, I don't mean like, you know, how they're sitting around having. But you're saying what?
So you're not ruling out kneading, but we don't have to do it. How long has...
I think this process has been around since the discovery of, you know, either like an emmer wheat or a spelt or, you know, when bread making was discovered sometime about 6,000 years ago on the... you know, the southern or the beginning of the Nile River in Ethiopia. This is all conjecture at this point. It was probably something people were grinding grains already, and they just observed this process occurring naturally with natural fermentation, not with that single strain yeast that we use called Saccharomyces.
And were people continuing to do it all along, or had this been largely forgotten until fairly recently?
I think that what ended up happening is that technology, a very, very critical period in human history, was the end of the century preceding the one that just ended, where it was almost like a tsunami of positivism, which changed, like, our thinking, you know, the invention of the steam combine, you know, all of a sudden, you know, it's from 17 people to cultivate, sow, harvest, and winnow 1 acre of grain and wheat. All of a sudden, you have one person who can do 2,000 acres or 200 acres. I forget exactly the number. And that caused all these country folk to you know, migrate en masse to the urban centers, which necessitated, you know, mass manufacturing bread, just because bread's function it took precedent over like any sort of aesthetic interest in it or any sense of quality. You know, I think that, you know, bread for a very, very long time, and at least the culture that I was raised in, it's really more of a culture of convenience, not quality.
My guest is Jim Leahy, L-A-H-E-Y, who with Rick Flast has written My Bread, the Revolutionary New Work, No Need Method. It is published by Norton, and you'll find the basic recipe on our website at WNYC.org. Also, I think a recipe for some other more a sweeter bread.
Oh yeah, we have we have a lot of fun recipes in the book that really, you know, when I was given the opportunity to do it, apart from.
But we're doing the coconut chocolate bread with the basic bread here, and I gather that you're going to be filmed as well by our online crew, and
cool.
We're going to actually be able to see you do this in a few days when they post that.
Awesome.
But let's talk about basically what you do, and you mix flour, yeast, water, and salt.
Well, think
and you put them in a bowl,
yeah.
And then you just cover them and let them sit for 12 to 18 hours or more?
Yeah, and basically what's happening is each one of those microscopic cells is budding. Depending upon the hold temperature, it could be as frequently as every 20 minutes or as infrequently as every 4 hours. And each of those buds, in turn, are also budding. So you have an exponential growth of this microbe, this second.
And they're leaving little holes in
no.
gas holes.
No,
do we wind up with a bread that
has crumb? That has more to do with the unique protein in wheat, which is called gluten, and gluten is a combination of gliadin and glutenin, two types of proteins that you find in a lot of grains. For example, rye flour contains more gliadin than glutenin, and that explains why the texture of rye flour is very kind of like gooey and sticky, very tacky. And because of gluten, you end up, and also the amount of water that's in the dough, as the yeasts I know this sounds kind of gross, they're secreting enzymes to break down the flour. They're also creating carbon dioxide and alcohol in the form of gas. And those little kind of, that gas basically forms pockets, and they kind of sometimes join together and make bigger pockets.
And we're starting off with bread flour.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you later about listeners' concerns. But any bread flour will do?
Yeah. I mean, if you look at it from a 19th century or point of view, even the worst flour that we have access to today, by 19th century standards, is beyond the highest quality ingredient that anyone could ever dream of obtaining.
Okay, so we've put it in a bowl and
yes.
covered it, and it's grown, it's doubled or more.
Yeah.
We haven't punched it or done any of the stuff that
yeah.
People usually do. And then you transfer it to a cotton towel.
Yeah, you basically what you do is you take the flour, salt, water, and yeast. You basically stir all the dry ingredients together. I used instant fast-acting yeast with salt and flour. You mix it together. You introduce the water and just mix the dough until it comes together as a kind of shaggy, loose dough. It could take you as little as 15 seconds
mm-hmm.
Or, you know, a minute. Then you allow the dough to basically ferment. And that's, you know, once the dough reaches its utmost height, as high as it can possibly grow, you can let it suspend or hang there for a couple of hours. And that's when the dough is really beginning to sort of undergo that transformation of flavor and texture. That,
and then you cover it with something else like cornmeal or something.
Yeah, then you take the dough and you dump it onto pull it out of the bowl and dump it onto a floured surface and just gently fold it over on itself and then put that onto a tea towel or something that's been lined with either. I love using wheat bran because I love the flavor it imparts, or flour, or cornmeal.
I use cornmeal.
Or cornmeal, yeah.
Because that's in the house. And then in a couple hours after that, you put it into something and you bake it.
A hot vessel.
Now, most people, I guess, would be using something like a Dutch oven, but it could be any hot vessel.
It could be anything that, I mean, I love ceramic. Ceramic is great because it produces more, it transfers more infrared radiation.
That's the Dutch oven.
Ceramic as opposed to metal. I mean, all heat is radiation. There's always a degree of infrared.
But
very, very simple. It's just you basically put it into a hot vessel, bake it. And that vessel is the oven, so there is no need to sort of throw an ice cube in a sheet pan or spray it with spritz it with water. And I think, you know, it mimics the baking conditions that you would have in either a traditional wood, like a stone oven or a professional bakery oven.
Now, Dave in Brooklyn left a comment on a show page. He says, I've been making the version of this recipe, which appeared in the New York Times back in November 06. Since that time, I've always had trouble transferring the sticky dough from the cotton towel to the heated pot. In the last year, I've taken to putting the dough on a sheet of parchment paper rather than a towel when it's time to place the dough in the pot. And I lower the sheet with the dough on top into the pot. I get a dent or two on the bottom of the bowl, but I get a great loaf of bread.
Yeah, I mean, if Dave wants to add a little less water to his dough, it probably will come out indistinguishably similar. That was a technique that I think what the Cook's Illustrated put out.
Yeah. Sure. Now another listener says she's
good.
Wheat intolerant. Would this method work with spelt flour, which still has gluten?
Yeah, of course.
But not a gluten-free flour.
Gluten-free flour, I mean, you'd have to do some experimentation and make sure that the yeast can somehow ferment and the dough is capable of trapping gas. But I have not yet experimented with a gluten-free.
Does it matter what water you use? They say New York bagels are so good because our tap water is so good.
You know, I believe in l'eau-hoir as opposed to terroir.
Uh-huh.
I believe in the principle that, you know, again, this incredibly abundant chemical that's all over the world. Before the Industrial Revolution, bread making probably used what we would consider non-potable water. And, I have a great recipe called Jones Beach bread, where you just go to the ocean, grab some seawater, put it through a coffee filter, don't heat it, just put it through a coffee filter, and use that straight in the dough, and it comes out beautifully.
Well, you have all sorts of other things that you bake with.
Juices.
You have Guinness stout, and you have juices and things like that. And there's a pizza dough recipe that makes absolutely the crispiest pizza bottom I've ever had.
Well,
but without a lot of, you don't put mozzarella and tomato sauce on it in the usual way. You went to Italy. You studied in Italy, didn't you? Is that the way they do it in Italy?
I was inspired by the way that bread bakers approached this idea of making pizza. For them, it was really more not about. I mean, you know, I grew up with this sort of like suburban Long Island, mall notion of what pizza is. And, when I went to a small town in Tuscany, in San Gimignano or San Cassiano, all these various places that I went when I was in my 20s, I was like, I thought it was really, really cool that people would take potatoes and put it on a piece of bread and just coat it with some olive oil. I thought it was like the most radical thing in the world, or just take either raw tomato puree or just crushed tomatoes and just put them onto a dough with a little bit of salt and oil. There was something very kind of raw and essential about it and beautiful because it wasn't overthought.
Now, people also are curious about sourdoughs, which you do have in here. Somebody asked if you can use Pyrex because
yes, absolutely.
He prefers that when he's baking.
Yeah, you can use Pyrex or Corningware. I've had a lot of success. You know, I've gone to, if anyone lives in Manhattan, to Pearl River and found some beautiful ceramic vessels that are stovetop that are like $12 that work perfectly well as well. I mean, you can use a variety of baking vessels.
Now, people have changed in their attitudes about bread in France. We now you can find bakeries that say traditionnel. They've returned to older methods, but they're not doing no knead, are they?
Well, you know, I think that I know that one of the most famous bakers in France, I think Eric Kayser, uses a method that's kind of similar. I think, you know, if one were to look at it from the point of view of an anthropologist, you see bits and pieces in the various processes that show you the old method from long ago.
As I said, we posted the recipes, or two recipes, on our website at wnyc.org. The book, My Bread, The Revolutionary No Work, No Need Method, published by Norton. My great thanks to Jim Leahy for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Leonard, for having me on your show.